Thank you, Kelly. Our last speaker for the day is Penny Bai. In her work, Penny lives and breathes uranium supply and demand. And she is certainly a key go-to person for us in investor relations. Penny will review the historical development of the uranium market and continue with that theme with a discussion of the current market fundamentals and how Cameco believes the market will evolve over the coming 10-year period. She is co-chair of the working group of the WNA that has recently published its biennial update on supply and demand. Welcome, Penny.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to all of you to Saskatchewan. And Bob, thank you for the very kind introduction. And thank you for letting me talk to you today about what is my favorite subject, uranium supply and demand. As Bob mentioned, I'll give you a little bit of a history lesson, and then we'll move into what things look like in the last few years and going forward. So, we can break the uranium and nuclear industry into three distinct phases. The birth of commercial nuclear power, which would encompass the years from 1950 to 1979. Next, the Middle Ages, which includes the years 1980 to about 2002. And lastly, the nuclear renaissance, which started in about 2003 and runs through today. The first phase is when we moved from this, uranium for weapons programs, to this, the birth of commercial nuclear power. The strategic nuclear arms race, beginning with the Manhattan Project, was the original driver behind the frantic global search for uranium. Governments were seeking stable supplies for their weapons programs and provided substantial resources to encourage new discoveries and production, particularly in the U.S. and the Soviet Union. The real commercial uranium heyday came in the period of the 70s, with the realization of the peaceful use of nuclear energy for power generation. This was the too-cheap-to-meter nuclear boom. In fact, a 1972 Atomic Energy Commission forecast estimated that nuclear capacity in the U.S. would reach between 825 and 1,500 gigawatts by the year 2000. This compares to the about 105 gigawatts that exist today. The corresponding projections of uranium prices exceeded $100 a pound, as supplies of uranium were secured even before the ink had dried on the nuclear plant orders. During this period, many utilities pursued self-supply programs with equity interests in exploration and mining companies, fearing being left with a reactor and no fuel. You see this represented in the production curve exceeding the demand curve based on that ultimately unfounded optimism. Nuclear power did grow dramatically worldwide over this period, but much less than the predictions, which caused the industry to produce far more uranium than would ultimately be needed by the world's nuclear reactors. It is this profound development and that of the huge military buildup of inventories that preceded it which would set the stage for 20 years of inventory drawdown. This slide also shows very clearly the direct relationship between high uranium prices and expansion of production, and that there is a very long lag between price increases and significant production increases. Moving on to the Middle Ages. As the 1970s came to a close, the uranium rush was beginning to lose some of its luster. Confidence in the nuclear industry was shaken by the partial core meltdown at Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania, despite there being no injuries, illness, or loss of life. The resulting re-engineering of existing plant designs and increased regulatory oversight caused many reactor projects to experience prolonged construction delays. Public opposition mounted as the anti-nuclear movement took hold. The high interest rates of the early 80s, combined with these construction delays, caused the costs of new reactors to skyrocket to unacceptable levels. A number of projects were abandoned at various stages of partial completion, and additional previously ordered plants were canceled outright. The secondary market emerged. Brokers sought out utilities with excess or unneeded uranium and wheeled it into willing buyers at deep discounts. The result was a prolonged period of inventory-driven prices, which bore no relation to the production economics of uranium mining. During this period, the uranium mining industry contracted, with production falling from a peak of 177 million pounds in 1982 to a low of 81 million pounds in 1999. With the outlook for nuclear looking meager at best and uranium prices below $10 per pound, operating mines simply shut down and worldwide exploration expenditures dropped dramatically. Industry consolidation was as equally dramatic as scores of uranium mining companies left the business, in some cases giving away their assets in exchange for relief from the reclamation liabilities. By 1998, only six companies produced more than 70% of worldwide uranium production. In the exploration field, by the late 1990s, as much as one-half of worldwide exploration investment could be accounted for between two companies, Cameco and Areva. While even the most pessimistic of analysts could predict that this situation could not last forever, consumption exceeding production by a 2-to-1 margin, a number of factors contributed to a sense of complacency about the future. Global uranium demand was almost flat. New builds in Asia was offset by European moratoriums and threats of early reactor retirements. The liquidation of government inventories from the U.S. and the former Soviet Union resulted in utilities having the perception of abundant supply. Low spot prices masked the underlying imbalance of resource inadequacy. As supplies in the near term were abundant at a cost that bore no relation to the cost of finding and extracting a pound of uranium 5 to 10 years in the future. The utilities' regulatory environment did not encourage resource development. Utilities found it very difficult to justify to its ratepayers that paying a producer a premium uranium price was a prudent decision. Even the most strategic utilities who wanted to encourage new production capacity would be judged unfavorably when compared to the benchmark of the depressed spot price. This brings us to the present day, where we are in the midst of the resurgence of nuclear power on a global scale. In North America, this turnaround was quite sudden and abrupt. Earlier in this decade, the talk was centered around the demise of nuclear power in deregulated electricity markets and whether reactors would even operate to the end of their licensed lives. And I vividly remember tracking U.S. reactor closures early in my years at Cameco and wondering if this was the industry I wanted to be in. Nuclear power was in competition with the quick-to-build and cheap-to-operate natural gas generation and the continued reliance on coal generation. Environmental costs of the various options were beginning to be discussed, but not yet influencing policy. A number of things changed that. High fuels hurt the competitiveness of natural gas generation. Nuclear plants dramatically improved performance, and fully amortized baseload nuclear power became the cost-competitive leader in a deregulated electricity market. The clean air advantages of nuclear and environmental shortcomings of coal began to take hold in public opinion and policy. And lastly, high oil prices and Middle Eastern conflicts also raised the general awareness of energy issues with a focus on the stability of domestic supplies. This turnaround first took the form of capacity uprates and license extensions and has further progressed to license applications and new reactor orders. From a uranium market perspective, this was and is all very welcome news, as it gives confidence that capital investments made today will be rewarded by the bright future of a growing market. Hopefully, the foregoing gives some context as to why the uranium market is where it is today. But what about the future? In particular, is it reasonable to ask whether uranium production will be able to keep up with the growth of the nuclear industry? We believe that it will, but a substantial amount of investment in exploration and new mine development will be required. The price signals we have seen in recent years are definitely helping reinvestment to become a reality. But remember, we are digging out of a very sizable hole from the 1980s and 90s when we essentially missed two complete exploration and development cycles. In addition, the recent global economic crisis has resulted in some delays of new projects, both on the demand and supply side. However, nuclear projects are very long-term, and it is expected the impact will be insignificant over the next 20 or so years. Our supply and demand forecast for the next 10 years is the best way to put these challenges into perspective. So we'll start with where we are today on the demand side. We can see there are currently 436 nuclear units operating in 30 countries, supplying about 15% of the world's electricity. Nuclear power has a key role to play in reducing greenhouse gases. Every 57,000 pounds of uranium used saves 1 million tons of carbon dioxide from being released into the atmosphere relative to coal. Said another way, the consumption of about 172 million pounds in 2008 prevented about 3 billion tons of carbon dioxide emissions, again, relative to coal. Looking at today's level of uranium production, we can see that when uranium prices were low, prior to 2003, production averaged about 93 million pounds a year. Since 2004, production has gradually ramped up, increasing to an average of 107 million pounds per year over the past 5 years. However, the increase in production has not been as quick as anticipated, despite the very dramatic price increase, and this is a result of the very long lead times for new production. Today, and in the recent past, we have seen new uranium market participants in the speculators. As foregoing supply disruptions were straining available supplies, the financial and investment community recognized an opportunity to capitalize on the nuclear energy success story. These analysts saw the imbalance between new mine production and growing consumption, caused by the 20 or so years of underinvestment, as a strong signal to buy not only the equities of exploration and mining companies, but also the physical product, uranium. It is estimated that these hedge funds and financial entities held about 17 million pounds at the end of 2008. And just as is in the case of grain, oil, and other commodity markets, the speculators can be praised or vilified, depending upon whether they are accumulating or dumping inventories. The reality is, however, that while they do not alter the long-term supply and demand fundamentals, they do add a great deal of volatility to the spot market. I think most of the nuclear industry will agree the speculators played a role in the rise to the high of $136 a pound in June of 2007 and are perhaps a factor in the market's drop to the current about $45 level. Looking at recent uranium prices, you can see this volatility. I will not go into any detail on the specific events, but the cumulative effect was to dramatically sop up any inventory slack that was remaining in the system, driving up prices, and then driving them back down again. So turning to the future, we expect the use of nuclear power to expand. Over the next 10 years, we anticipate 115 new reactors will be online by 2018. Over the same time period, 18 reactors are expected to be shut, so our forecast includes 533 reactors operating at 2018, which is a net increase of 97 reactors from today. The largest growth area is Asia. In China, we expect 31 new reactors by 2018, and it is anticipated that as many as 20 new reactors will be under construction in China at the end of 2009. China previously had a target of 40 gigawatts of generating capacity by 2020, but this has been revised upwards, with some reports as high as 86 gigawatts. In contrast, we assume China reaches 50 gigawatts by 2020, so the chemical forecast is a bit conservative. Another large growth area is India. where 18 new reactors are expected over the next 10 years. India has stated its goal is to have nuclear capacity rise to 20 gigawatts by 2020. We assume 18 gigawatts by 2020, again being conservative. And in the rest of Asia, Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan, we expect 14 new reactors. When deriving our forecast, we use market intelligence from a large number of sources, publicly available information, market reports that we have purchased from industry analysts, and direct communications with those in the nuclear industry. We then evaluate how likely the various forecasts are to come to pass and make assumptions about each reactor in our demand model. The inclusion of these reactors in our model provides us with a forecast of nuclear capacity measured in gigawatts. The 533 reactors forecast for 2018 translates into nuclear capacity of 498 gigawatts, which is a 20% increase from today. Over the next 20 years, more than 30 currently non-nuclear countries are actively considering embarking upon nuclear power programs. Those included in our forecast include Belarus, Egypt, Indonesia, Iran, Italy, Kazakhstan, Turkey, the United Arab Emirates, and Vietnam. The nuclear generating capacity forecast, combined with assumptions about how reactors are operated, gives us a forecast of world demand for uranium. Today, approximately 177 million pounds of uranium are required to fuel current reactors, and we expect this to increase to about 226 million pounds over the next 10 years as the new reactors previously discussed are built. A 1,000-megawatt reactor can provide electricity for about 760,000 homes, on average, and requires about 500,000 pounds of uranium a year. This is compared to 3.5 million tons of coal, or 12 million barrels of oil, or 77 billion cubic feet of natural gas. This means that Cameco's 2008 share of uranium production could fuel 34 reactors, which provides enough power for about 26 million modern homes. The gold bar in this graph represents worldwide demand for uranium based on the actual needs of existing reactors and the projected requirements of reactors planned. Over the next 10 years, we expect demand to amount to a little over 2 billion pounds of uranium, and that it will increase on average by almost 3% per year over the period. It is important to note this is a forecast of requirements and not necessarily of market demand. And when I say requirements, I mean how much uranium all reactors need annually to operate. Turning to production, we see that the uranium price increased dramatically in 2007 and 8, while uranium mines collectively struggled to achieve production targets. At the beginning of 2008, we expected mine production to be about 128 million pounds for the year, but output was actually about 114 million pounds. With existing operations having difficulty in achieving production targets and relatively few projects in the pipeline, production has not been able to rebound as quickly as uranium prices have, but new production has been brought online. As shown here, with the majority in Kazakhstan and Africa, this chart shows total capacity of new mines that have entered commercial production in the past 5 years, which will add about 40 million pounds when they reach full operating capacity. As we see, a number of new mines are expected this year. A total of about 25 production centers in 6 countries have or will start producing by the end of 2009. However, we have already seen the impact of falling prices, with the Dominion project being put on care and maintenance in October 2008 after starting up in 2007. And URI has recently shut Vasquez and Kingsville Dome in the U.S. The lower prices may also result in the delay of some other projects, especially in Africa, where much of the planned production requires prices in excess of $40. Since Africa has the potential to have some of the fastest expanding production, any delays or cutbacks here could be significant for future uranium production. Our supply and demand scenario, which I will build for you shortly, shows production from existing mines, and this slide provides you with a perspective on where existing mines are. 62% of the world uranium production comes from 10 mines in 6 different countries. The large scale of these mining operations is certainly a source of their competitive strength, but at the same time presents challenges to the overall uranium market when production interruptions at individual mines can have a profound impact on broader supply availability, as has been experienced in the recent past. In total, there were about 45 existing production centers in 2008, with plans to add another 8 in 2009. Canada has historically been the largest producing country, but this is expected to change in the future, with Kazakhstan becoming the largest producing country in 2009 and beyond. This is due to the addition of the capacities shown in the previous slide. Kazakhstan has seen the greatest rate of increased production of any country in the last couple of years, with 2008 production increasing by 28% over the 2007 level. So what are these existing mines expected to supply over the next 10 years? First, let me make clear what we mean by existing mines. This includes all mines in commercial operation at the beginning of 2009, and we assume generally that they will produce at or near their stated capacity levels until current reserves and resources are depleted. It is expected 2009 uranium production will be between 125 and 130 million pounds and will remain near that range over the next 10 years from existing mines. This will give us a total of about 1.2 billion pounds or 59% of demand. Moving on to sources of secondary supplies over the next 10 years. One of the best-known sources of secondary supply is the highly successful disarmament initiative, the Russian HEU deal. As of June 2009, 367 metric tons of bomb-grade HEU has been recycled, resulting in 10,621 metric tons of LEU, which is the equivalent to 14,686 nuclear warheads eliminated. Our forecast includes about 20 million pounds per year of Russian HEU through 2013, when the program is complete. Another significant secondary source of supply is the U.S. government's uranium inventories. In March 2008, DOE issued a policy statement which contained a general framework explaining how it will manage its surplus uranium inventories, including the need to dispose of them without disruption to commercial markets. In December 2008, DOE released its excess uranium inventory management plan for their 153 million pounds of excess inventory. The plan provides for the disposition of uranium based on a combined annual quantity of no more than 10% of annual U.S. nuclear fuel requirements. However, DOE may exceed this annual limit for certain purposes, such as initial cores for new reactors. The DOE indicated that less than 3 million pounds U308 would enter the market in 2009, and it would gradually ramp up to 5 million pounds U308 by 2013. In addition, 20 million pounds will be made available for initial cores for new U.S. reactors beginning in 2010, and all of this has been included in our forecast. Oops. Another source of supply is the offset to demand that results from the use of MOX and reprocessed uranium fuel, which we include as a secondary supply source. Our forecast assumes the use of these fuels will increase over time as many countries struggle with how to deal with nuclear waste. And we assume that about 100 million pounds from this source will be made available to the market over the next 10 years. Also included in secondary supplies is the uranium generated from the European enrichers sending their tails, a waste product, to Russia for re-enriching. These contracts will all expire by 2010, and Russia has stated they will not extend them, so this is not a source of supply beyond 2010. Lastly, included in our secondary supplies is the drawdown of inventories, largely Russian government inventories. Russia releases uranium from their government stockpiles as required, and much of this comes to the West through LEU contracts with utilities. In total, we expect the consumption of secondary supplies to amount to about 440 million pounds over the next 10 years, which is about 22% of demand. Of note is that the use of secondary supplies are expected to decrease annually over the next 10 years, such that by 2018, only about half the current levels is consumed, largely as a result of the Russian HEU agreement ending. Now, comparing our supply sources to demand over the next 10 years shows us that about 400 million pounds of new supply sources will be required, as secondary sources can only make up a portion of the cumulative production deficit through the next decade. We know new mine production will not be easy, but as discussed earlier, we see production is increasing and will be there to meet demand. And there is some new production currently being developed, and here I will show you some examples, including our own Cigar Lake in northern Saskatchewan, which is expected to produce 18 million pounds annually when it reaches full production. As discussed previously, African production is expanding, and the Kayelekera mine in Malawi has started producing earlier this year and will supply 3 million pounds per year when it reaches full production. Also in Africa is the Trekopje project, where production is expected to commence before the end of this year and ramp up to full annual capacity of about 8 million pounds. And of course, Kazakh ISR production from numerous operations will also add to increases in world uranium production. It should be emphasized that mines currently under development are no means a certainty, and numerous challenges exist for these mines to reach full production capacity. Lastly, I would like to briefly show you a comparison of the recently released WNA market report and the Cameco view. As Bob mentioned, I was involved in the production of the WNA market report as a co-chair, and my duty there was to coordinate information from a variety of groups and ensure that it was reported in a consistent, timely, accurate, and impartial manner. So turning back to us versus the WNA, you can see that generally we are of the same view. But over the 10-year period, the Cameco view of demand is more optimistic than the WNA view. And this is largely because of the assumptions about new reactors. The WNA has a net increase of 59 reactors compared to our forecast of 97 reactors. And this results in a difference of almost 30 gigawatts in nuclear capacity over the 10 years. In contrast, our view of production over the next 10 years is more pessimistic, as we have seen how mines struggle to meet production targets and built this into the Cameco model. Cameco supplies from secondary supplies are higher than the WNA assumptions due to the inclusion of more Russian inventory. In total, Cameco assumes almost 400 million pounds of new production will be needed, and the WNA assumes about 265 million pounds will be required. And again, it's largely due to their more pessimistic demands case. So in conclusion, Cameco believes the uranium mining industry is rising to the challenges of the nuclear renaissance and that the fuel cycle will continue to be one of the greatest advantages. It will, however, be the product of significant investment, risk-taking, and hard work among the world's uranium miners. It will also be a product of the foresight of strategic nuclear utilities that forge strong relationships with their suppliers and provide the baseload contracts that allow this level of investment to move forward. The success of the uranium mining industry will also be dependent upon the support of other key stakeholders, such as our local communities governments, and regulators, we have a responsibility to operate under the highest standards of environmental stewardship, safety, and ethical integrity. In turn, we expect reasonable policy and regulation from our regulating bodies, which balances our right to earn a profit for our shareholders while conducting our business in the best public interest possible. In response to a number of production challenges at our own operations, Cameco has set out to improve its culture to one of high reliability and operational excellence. In closing, while the uranium market is rapidly moving into a new phase of growth, it presents a whole new set of challenges and uncertainties. Having said that, the uranium industry is taking this challenge on as a great opportunity, and I am confident that the nuclear fuel cycle will continue to be one of nuclear power's greatest advantages. I thank you for your attention and look forward to your questions.